Welcome to JCI Podcast. I'm your host, Mike DiLonardo of JCI Atlanta. This is the first in a long series, hopefully, of JCI Atlanta Lunch Series speakers. Today we have Steve Fall of the Sports Resource.
Well, I'm going to tell you today about my business, the Sports Resource. Started doing it about 10 years ago. I'm going to kind of break things down into a few different parts. I'm going to tell you, first of all, what I do, and then go into how I found this kind of unusual career and explain to you how it works, maybe give you a little glimpse inside the world of professional sports that you might not have seen before. And then at the end, I'll give you some advice, some things I learned that can help you if you want, you know, if your goal is to turn, you know, one of your passions into a career. But first of all, what do? I put together statistical packages and analysis for sports agents that they use for contract negotiations. And I do so for the four major sports, baseball, basketball, football, and sometimes hockey. And they use it for a number of things. The biggest thing is arbitration. Is anybody familiar with arbitration? Well, in baseball, like, the player picks a figure, the team picks a figure, and basically they fight it out, a lot of negotiations, and then if they can't figure it out, they go to court. Very numbers intensive, and we put together like 90-100 page briefs, and I help the sports agents do that. But the packages are also used for free agency, working out long-term deals, player recruitment, especially for the NBA and the NFL. The talented college players have agents just hounding them to come out for the draft. So the agents want to sign that player because they know that's how they're going to make their money down the road. So I put together a package that the agent can use to lure the client. And it actually has two purposes, because then down the road, they can use it to send to the teams and try to influence draft position. Because you get drafted 10th, that's a lot more money than getting drafted 20th. Then a few things I do to a lesser extent. I also help agents with like putting together packages for sponsorships, trying to get advertising opportunities, that kind of thing, and even branding packages for players every now and then. And then the last thing's kind of cool is agents sometimes ask me to put together packages to try to influence voters on major awards, like Most Valuable Player, Rookie of the Year, things like that. They'll like leak it to the press, they'll send it to all the voters, try to get them to, you know, influence their vote. Now, so how did I stumble upon this niche? How did I find this career? It really took two lucky breaks. Back in 1990, I started doing a newsletter, just a baseball newsletter, and I used to, you know, get subscribers, advertisers, that kind of thing, send it out to them, send it out to prospects, but I also circulated it to front offices in baseball. And one day, I got a call from the Chicago White Sox general manager. And just so happened, I had wrote an article. This is the first lucky break. I had just written an article on Jack McDowell, their ace pitcher. And they were preparing to go to arbitration with McDowell. And McDowell was asking for $6.5 million. At that time, that was the most lucrative arbitration case ever. The team was offering $5.1 million. And either way, whether he won or lost, it was going to be the most lucrative case either way. So I submitted the information, and as it turned out, they won the case. So at that time, I had the idea, well, if teams need this kind of information for arbitration, well, then maybe agents are going to want it even more, because teams have interns, they have departments that can put together their presentation. A lot of agents are just one-man operations. So I decided in 1994 to start marketing my services to agents, and that started the Sports Resource. Now, I didn't really, like, at first things didn't really take off. I mean, I got some work, but not a bunch, but I wasn't all that disappointed because I had a full-time job at the time. So then came lucky break number two. I got laid off from work. And so at that time, I mean, it didn't seem, I wasn't too happy at the time, but I thought, well, hey, this is the time I got to go for it. I got to focus all my energy on the Sports Resource. So I also began writing again, like I had with the newsletter, because I had some time. The business tends to be pretty seasonal, so that kind of filled in the gaps. So I wrote, and I still do, you know, mostly about baseball, you know, basketball, football, and statistics. So it's all kind of related. That was 10 years ago when I got laid off, and still doing it today. So now, how does it work? I know some of you are involved in real estate out there. A lot of it's the comparables that you have, just like with houses. Like if one player is making $2 million and one of my agents says, I want my guy to get 2.3, you know, you got to show that. You got to show that in the numbers. That could take like up to 40 pages of exhibits, but that's the basic concept. You also want to show like the value that player has to his team. In baseball, that's pretty easy because in baseball, they record everything. Basketball is tougher, and then in football, there's some things in football that just aren't recorded. I mean, what linemen do, that kind of thing. So it's harder to do in those sports. So that's a bit more challenging. And also sometimes I'll even do projections, like for future performance. Team's going to sign a guy to an 8-year deal. They want to have an idea how he's going to perform when he's 35 years old, if he's only 27 now. So I do that as well. One thing that's really important is the numbers have to be relevant. I mean, if you watch a baseball game on TV, you're just bombarded with all these numbers that they throw at you. And in a contract setting, 90% of that is nonsense. I mean, it has no application at all. And for me, like if I just have one or two exhibits in my presentation that doesn't have credibility, it really hurts the whole thing. So you got to make sure that it's relevant. Some challenges that I faced early on and some mistakes I made. I want to just talk about that briefly. Like the hardest thing for me to do was how to value myself, how to charge for my time, how to charge for a product, a project. Because there really was nobody out there that I knew of doing the same thing. I didn't have competition that I knew of, and if I did, I had no idea what they charged. So it was really trial and error. You know, I'd be on the phone to an agent, I'd kind of just judge from his reaction whether it sounded like a lot or a little, you know. And it worked both ways. I ended up working too hard on some of the projects, not making a lot of money. And others, I just kind of scared the agent off when I gave the quote. But eventually, I figured out how to do that. And also, I didn't take advantage of technology at first. I didn't even use spreadsheets for about 2 years. I don't know how I did it. Because, I mean, it was a lot of numbers, a lot of like numbers crunching and that kind of thing. I mean, I've made my life so much easier because now I can do so many different things. I have my stats so they update when I'm sleeping. I can just wake up in the morning, hit refresh, takes the stats off the internet, puts them into the formulas, bam, everything's updated. But it took me a while to learn that. And if you're starting out on your own, there's probably a lot of things you can do to automate that you don't realize you can do. And then probably the biggest thing when I started is, well, my suggestion is make success your goal. My goal at first was just survival. I wanted to show, hey, I don't have to go back to a full-time job. I can make this my career. And I just did well enough to get by for quite a while. And I think if you make success your goal, set your sights higher, you'll do better. Because, I don't know, I think a lot of people have this idea that if you do something you love, you can't make a lot of money at it or you can't be successful. I don't think that's true. I think you can. You have to work at it, but I think you can do that. Now, just some other things, too, that I've learned that can help you turn your passions into a career. Just some advice. Don't think that it can't be done. I talk to a lot of people who say, yeah, I'd love to do this. I'd love to do that. You know, I love pets. I want to start a doggy daycare. I want to do this. And they say, no, but I got the 401k. I got this. I got benefits. You know, it can be done if, you know, you have a good idea and you really go for it and you have a unique talent. I think it can be done. See, a lot of people don't think that's possible and don't ever try. So that really helps the percentages for you, I think. I think it works out to your advantage. And also, just take the leap. You know, when you're ready to go, just make the leap. I held on to that one. As long as I was holding on to that full-time job, I never focused on my business. You know, I'd procrastinate. You know, because you're working 9 to 5, you're tired when you get home. You don't want to pick up the phone and call clients. So because of that, I don't think things really took off until I got laid off. I was always like putting energy into my full-time job. So again, take the leap. That adrenaline rush you're going to get when you make the decision to go forward is just incredible. That might not be enough to carry you where you want to be, but it'll at least get you headed in the right direction. That's all I had. We left some time for questions. I wanted to ask some people if they had any questions about it.
Well, I have a question. I know it's you doing statistics.
Yeah.
What kind of, if somebody wants to use some statistics in their business, like I'm in real estate, so that's something that I easily could use, but I don't remember my statistics from college. What are some useful type of formulas or statistics that you use that probably are kind of basic that people can use in other industries?
It's interesting because, I always joke that I have a degree in sports. I spent hours watching sports, and I learned that, and I have methods that I came up with on my own that apply to sports. I just don't know how much they'd apply to other things. I guess you could take, do the same thing with houses and, show color charts that show this and that, and this house is so much, you should get this. I don't know how you did it. Probably if you showed me how you do it, I could give you some suggestions. Maybe, Conti, could you start passing that around? This will give you a little idea. That's a newsletter I send out to my clients to try to lure people. No, you don't have to send the magazine yet, but yeah, just send that around. That might give you some ideas of just a couple of methods that I used in there. Yeah.
Is there an official source that you have to derive your statistics from so that they're valid? And do you have problems with the agents or whatever? Like, how do I know if these are valid? They can just come anywhere on the internet, that type of thing?
Yeah, you have to use the official sources at least for your raw data. The good thing now is that's one of the things with the internet. At first, the internet had a lot of misinformation. I would go through an entire report. I'd be up at 6 in the morning ready to finish a report that was due the next day. And then I saw that a source, all the numbers were off one-third of an inning. Threw off every stat I had. And it's crazy, but that makes a difference. I couldn't turn it in that way. I had to go back and correct everything. Yet now you have a lot of sources that will be considered official. So it's a lot better now. And even some of the alternate media now, Baseball Prospectus has a great website. Some other sports have some good websites. That information is usually accurate. But I make sure it's accurate before I use it. Another question?
Yeah, I'm currently reading The 4-Hour Workweek.
Yeah, me too.
Great book.
Yeah.
And one of the things, part of the DEAL is automated. I wonder how much of your business is automated.
Not as much as it should be, but 100% more than it used to be. I want to get so it's better, but I have now where I've learned how to use macros where I can say, go run this, do a good chunk of my report. I've got something that does that now, but I need to tweak it a little bit. And then the best thing I discovered is web queries. Do you know what web queries are with Excel? These are the best thing in the world. You link to a web page, and it's great for statistics. Every time the statistics update, they come into your spreadsheet, and you just hit refresh, everything updates, and any formulas you have attached to it, they update at the same time. You can learn how to do it. It's not that complicated. Anything else, Phil?
One of the points you made was that in order to add value for your agents, your clients, that you mm-hmm. share the relevant numbers. Mm-hmm. Can you give examples of what we might hear on television versus what you share?
Yeah. What I don't like on television is how they say, this drives me crazy. Chipper Jones is 4-for-7 lifetime against Randy Johnson. And fans will look at that, wow, he owns Randy Johnson. Well, there's a number of problems with that. The biggest thing is sample size. Whenever you have a small amount of small numbers, just don't mean nearly as much as big numbers. And 7 is not nearly enough. You can't conclude that he owns Randy Johnson by that. Plus, those are lifetime numbers. Both those guys have been around a long time. The 7 at-bats might have come in 1993. So they're not exactly relevant. So that's something I would say is not that relevant. The way I would say is if a guy has maybe hit 50 times against a pitcher, that I would say is relevant. And it was, say, if it was in maybe the last 5 years, that would be relevant. The thing I like to do is I like, instead of saying he does this against an individual, I like to see how he does against a similar type of pitcher. How does he do against left-handers? That has more value to me because then you're talking about a big group of numbers. Yes?
Kind of two questions. You mentioned that your first client was a team.
but are you now exclusively with agents? Is that for competitive reasons, or is it just kind of coincidence, or how's that play out?
I had to make the decision because when I talked to agents at first, they said, "You're not affiliated with any teams, are you?" And I said, "No, I'm." I hadn't planned to anyway. And then they said, "Yeah, because we wouldn't want to be talking to you if we knew you were working for the Braves." So I just made up my mind to go to the players' side, and that's been it ever since. I don't do anything for teams.
So the follow-up to that, I was pretty fascinated by Michael Lewis' Moneyball and how the afterword, only a couple of teams actually read the book and used numbers or used the right numbers. And that was a couple of years ago. Has that changed at all, or is it still just a couple of teams?
Yeah, I think every year there's more people who are hiring GMs that aren't from a baseball background. They're hiring MBAs, they're hiring guys from MIT, Harvard, that kind of stuff. Some people with a numbers background. So I think every year you get more and more. But the majority is still like old school baseball.
So would you say, is that going to make the job easier or harder or not matter?
I think it makes it easier because if the teams appreciate the kind of things that I do now, they probably appreciate it more. Like one of the problems I have is I could do much more innovative stuff, but they don't like that for arbitration. Arbitration's like meat and potatoes. So I'll do something that's a little bit different, and the agent or the players association will come back and say, "Look, you can't put that in there. That's a little beyond us right now. Yeah, it's too hard to explain, whatever." But the strange thing is like a lot of times, 2 or 3 years later, you see it in arbitration. It takes time. But some of the stuff that I was using 5 years ago, they told me not to use. Now they use it in arbitration. Things like holds, the stat for relief pitchers. So eventually it tends to break into the mainstream, if it's good.
Have you ever approached any of like Vegas gaming houses for advisement?
No, I never have.
I would imagine that being lucrative as they're creating the spreads and everything, and your historical knowledge would be valuable.
Yeah. And my guess is I have no idea how they do it. But I'm thinking they've got some MIT dudes on their side, you know. They've got to. Ben?
You talked about how at the beginning you were having some trouble figuring out how you're going to bill. How'd you end up resolving that? Because obviously, you buy hour or what you have has some innate value to it. How do you bill or value your services?
Well, at first I did it exclusively by hour, but then I didn't really like the idea of agents looking at it and saying, "Oh, 10 pages, why did that take them 9 hours? Well, they don't see the stuff that I try and doesn't make it into the report. So I just started charging by the package after that. So, arbitration package A is bam, arbitration package B is this. And sometimes agents will say, "Look, just put 5 hours into this, give me what you got. Give me the best stuff you can come up with." That makes it easy. But it was tough at first, especially because you're negotiating with negotiators. I mean, those are the best negotiators there are. That's what they do. I'm just some guy in Atlanta, Yeah.
It just seems like you just take an unbelievable amount of time to put all this information together, and then you're doing it across all sports. How can you handle that?
Yeah. Well, think about it. It's like, your jobs. I'd probably be amazed at some of the things, a realtor that can drive by a house and say, "That thing's $185,000. You just, when you're doing it all the time, you get good at it, you learn shortcuts, you remember a chart you did years before, the same kind of things come up. And I also have the benefit, a lot of agents, tell me give me direction on what they want to do. And every time they do that, it's a learning experience. And I can usually apply that to a future report. Yeah.
Can you explain a little further how you translate to sponsorship deals? You kind of mentioned that. Is that a big part or just a real small part?
No, I've just done a few things like that. I'll put together a branding on a player, for example. How is this guy dependable? Maybe they want to market him to a tire company or something. I don't know. But you say, "Why is Andrew Jones dependable? Why can we count on his glove?" And just kind of build off that. I'm still working on that. I haven't done many of them. They are kind of fun to do. They get you thinking a little differently. But I don't do a lot of those. Anything else?
Competition now?
Yeah, there is now. The biggest thing now is a lot of agents do it themselves. They'll hire somebody in their office. I think because of Moneyball and all that kind of thing, there's a lot more people that that get into it now. And then there's also like companies like Stats Inc. They're amazing. You see their stats up on the screen for games all the time. They also do analysis now. So I don't think it's as good as the stuff I do, but yeah, they're starting to get involved in it too.
Where do you network to meet agents?
I don't. I mean, every now and then, I went to the Sports Lawyers Association meeting a couple times, but a lot of those guys aren't actually agents. So it's kind of hard to do. I mean, I've gone to the All-Star Game, Super Bowl. You can meet some agents there. I haven't been to the Super Bowl yet, but yeah, a lot of events. Most of the time, yeah, I shoot out my newsletters. I send them emails. I have an HTML version of that too. Email marketing. Word of mouth a little bit. Although part of the problem is everything I do is confidential. That's why I didn't mention any specific cases. Everything's confidential. So agents don't really refer me to other agents all that much, unfortunately. Any other questions? Oh, yeah.
Send out your fantasy football picks.
Yeah. Do you know what? I played fantasy baseball for 2 years, and to me, it was just too much. You know, when you're doing this all day, I mean, it's just you gotta say, hey, I just want to watch a movie right now, or you gotta break away from it. Cool. Do you want to take one more?
Or most of your stats tied in kind of like what they do, trying to find new stats and how they correlate to wins.
Yeah.
Finding the trends, because I know like with Moneyball, I was talking about finding the undervalued statistics at that time.
Right.
You know, as more teams catch on, that you're constantly looking for newer statistics that are underpaid. Is that typical what you do? It gets to, like you were saying, maybe too technical for some teams, or you have to wait a few years before some of those, like, OPS was a while ago.
Right.
It's that no one really knew or understood, and now it's fairly common. And
yeah, you have to be, some of that stuff, it's really cool, like as far as, like, you can do, what do they call it? Correlation efficiency and this kind of thing, regression analysis, but that kind of thing scares off teams. I mean, I do apply some of that, but in most cases, it's not what they use that much. And I do try to tie things to wins as much as possible.
But besides wins, I would also, from the owner's standpoint, do you tie in ever to like attendance too? Because
yeah, attendance is a criteria for arbitration. So yeah. Not too much, but yeah. It's usually an exhibit or two.
Some of the things sometimes, maybe not so much the GM, but the owner is going to get involved. They produce, but is he going to bring the fans in more?
Yeah. That's one thing you find, though. The more research you do, people think that ball players are what brings in the fans. The things that bring in the fans are winning. I mean, winning is like, blows anything else away. The only exception is in places like Chicago, Boston, where you have fan-friendly stadiums that are more of a destination for people that are sold out almost all the time. So, great. Well, thanks a lot for having me come down, Ben.
Thank you for listening to JCI Podcast. We want to thank Steve Fall for coming down for our first JCI Atlanta Lunch Series. And for more information, please visit jciatlanta.org. I hope you will visit us next time as we continue to add podcasts to our site. Thank you very much.